everybody. This is Patricia Corey, your host for Beyond the Matrix, for people who think outside the box of convention. And, you know, I have some very personal, let's say, mission-type desires to help this planet. And one of them, you know very well, is the cetacean situation. So here I am in the Azores. I've been here for a number of weeks now. And if you recall, the last time I was here last year, I did a quick video clip. The clip said, what will happen if the Gulf Stream dies? What will happen to the whales and dolphins? What will happen to these islands? And I want you to know that since I've been here, we're talking May and all through June until now, there have been maybe 5 days of sun, and the rest has been torrential rain, chemtrails, hellacious wind, and very, very few sightings of cetaceans here. And I just hope that my premonition is not coming so quickly to pass. But I will be talking more and more about that as time passes, because I'll be back here in August, and hopefully this is just more of the Earth changes that we're seeing and not the death of the Gulf Stream, which may or may not be the same thing. I would like to segue into the fact that because of my interest today to really bring home yet again the plight of the cetaceans, I've been talking a lot about what's happened in Peru to the dolphins, and that I've told many of you to tune in to bluevoice.org and get it firsthand from Hardy Jones, who has been to Peru. And Hardy is not a newcomer to my show. He's back again today. I've asked him to go into great depth to talk to us about what he's discovered there, and always ending on a positive note, which is how we all are working. We want to hear from Hardy of what we can look forward to as far as how we're going to pull this situation out. So please welcome Hardy Jones. Thank you for coming, Hardy. Thank you always for coming back on the show.
Pleasure to be with you, Pat. Thank you.
So I know I've been following your work in Peru, and I'd like to dedicate this show pretty much to the situation in Peru and anything else you want to fill in as far as the overall picture of what's going on now with sonar. I know you're not comfortable about talking about the Navy drills, but I think it's all related. So tell me, what would you like to begin talking about tonight, today?
Well, the first thing we should do is just to recap the fact that along the northern coast of Peru, which is on the west coast of South America, there has been a mass mortality event of common dolphins, primarily common dolphins, also Burmeister porpoise, but to a much lesser extent. I heard about it originally in February when it was said that there were about 250 dead dolphins in this area up in Lambayeque State Prefecture in Peru. And then the story seemed to kind of go away. Some experts poo-pooed it, but it was actually, the truth of the matter was, nobody had been out to look. There were just some vague stories from fishermen. So I let go of the story at that point, and then at the end of February, at the end of March, I again got information from a Peruvian veterinarian based in Lima, a guy who I've known for quite some time, marine mammal expert and marine mammal rescuer. He said that he had a reliable report that there were 1,000 dead dolphins in this area. This is really turning out to be a real mystery story and one of tremendous importance. And I said, look, is this real? Are they really there? And he said, well, I have these reports from people who I find credulous, and that there are a massive number of dead dolphins. So I remember it was a Saturday, and I was sitting with my wife, Deborah, and she just went to the computer and booked me on a flight the following day to Lima. I was down there, and we were off to the northern beaches the following day. We chartered a four-wheel and ran up the coast at a distance of 85 miles, 135 kilometers. And during that space, we saw personally, eyes on, 615 dead dolphins.
Oh, God.
And we were, it was like being on the beaches of Normandy. So they were, this story of this mass mortality event had, was really true. And we reported it, and then the world press kind of picked up on it, and I was interviewed on CNN and by the New York Times and a bunch of other media. And so the story came to life, but it's now receded again. It's obviously a terribly important story because, you know, something this devastating happening in the oceans to creatures who are so similar to humans is really something we have to get a handle on. But as the weeks passed and there really was no smoking gun, there was no definitive, in fact, pretty much everything was ruled out except for one thing, and many people even ruled this out, and that was the seismic testing conducted by oil companies that was going on at the same time as the die-off, as the mass mortality event was taking place. And Dr. Carlos Yaipenyanos, who is the Peruvian veterinarian who heads the organization called ORCA down in Peru, a rescue organization, he was with me on the beach. Blue Voice funded the research, funded the investigation, brought him and his team up to the northern beaches of Peru, and he conducted necropsies on 30 dolphins. The result that he ultimately came up with was that it was the death of the dolphins came from acoustical trauma being loud sounds underwater that, in this case, what his hypothesis is that these very loud sounds underwater drove feeding dolphins from depth rapidly to the surface, and that they suffered decompression syndrome, decompression sickness, the bends, as we refer to it, and that they thus died. I was, as I said, of course, I was with him, and the dolphins who were dead on the beaches were, in some cases, highly decomposed and had been there for quite a while. But heartbreakingly, there were others that were fresh in the surf, including a baby that I'll never forget. And they were very healthy-looking dolphins. They were well-fed. They had no marks on them from, for instance, from being netted by fisheries. And they had no indication of disease. None of the things that would be evident symptomatically of disease were present. So there was no red tide. So where do you go? Well, I am quoting Dr. Yaipenyanos' conclusions when he said it is acoustical trauma. He was not willing to go out and say that it came from the seismic testing, because, rightly, he is a veterinarian, and he doesn't have expertise in concluding what the source of the sound was. He could simply examine the bodies and come to his conclusion. However, what Blue Voice has come to conclude is that it is that the circumstantial evidence leads us to believe that there is a plausible cause of death of the dolphins along the Peruvian coast may well be seismic exploration for oil that was being carried out in the area at the same time that the mass mortality event occurred.
Has it since stopped, or are there more dying?
It apparently has stopped. From now on, I'll call him Carlos. Dr. Carlos Yepeñanos, the Peruvian veterinarian. Carlos has just come back from the northern coast, and he's gathered more information on what's been going on up there. I believe that he found that there had been dolphins dying further north than had been originally described. But the die-off apparently stopped sometime, let's say, end of April or early May. And it may, well, number one, what happened is that the seismic testing ended in April. But in addition to that, the dolphins, the common dolphins who come in during those months of January, February, March, April, they traditionally leave in April. And what is interesting is too small a word for it, is there is a second population of common dolphins who move into this area in late June or July, coming up right now. So we'll see what happens with this new population. Hopefully there will, of course, be no such catastrophe again.
Do we have any idea of who this is, what company this is? And I know you don't like to politicize, but obviously if they've been doing seismic testing a couple of months ago, there's no reason to believe they've done what they need to do and they're gone. So where do we stand as far as public outcry?
Well, the oil companies certainly are not gone. The exploration has ended. They'll be doing their conclusions based on this seismic testing. And then they will decide, I guess, whether they are going to drill for oil. We should be aware, though, that this is not an offshore, way down in Peru, South America event that affects only that area. The United States, during the spring, put out a call for comment on a request from the oil companies to President Obama to allow this same kind of seismic testing to take place on the shores of the United States between Florida and New Jersey over a course of 8 years.
Well, at the same time they're going to be doing that, we also have the Navy putting out the same, let's say, token request for comments on the upcoming 5-year programs of all-out war on the oceans. And they, of course, I'm sure you're well aware that they say that the take of mammals, sea mammals, will be around 11 million.
I'm not familiar with the Navy issue. This one story of trying to figure out what's happening in Peru is something that takes all of my time and my and Blue Voices resources. We just have pumped everything we have into this Peruvian situation. So I can only, in the most general sense, talk about the Navy sonar. I can say that the Obama administration itself has admitted that the detonations, the seismic detonations off the east coast of the United States, would injure up to 138,500 marine mammals, which is, and they're conducting this, they will be conducting this test. If it's approved, they will be conducting it in some of the richest waters in the United States in terms of marine mammals. The migratory pathway for right whales, humpback whales, offshore dolphins, will all be impacted by this kind of testing.
Oh, man. All right. For those of you who have not heard my guest, Rosalind Peterson, since you know I have this concern about the Navy testing, so we're not going to be able to go into that here. As Hardy said, he's not up to date on that. But, you know, you can always check Rosalind Peterson. She's making an outcry for people to stand up, for citizens to stand up and make their voice known about the programs for all-out war on the oceans with the Navy. So please, not now while we're with Hardy, but when we finish, and if you are concerned, be sure to look up Rosalind Peterson and get an update on what's going on there. I also want to announce, many of you know that I have succeeded in founding the organization SaveEarthsOceans.org. And we're finally getting through all the bureaucracy, but we have been approved for nonprofit status, which is a big deal. I'm sure, Hardy, you can agree what it takes to get that is not easy. And we have dedicated a part of our funding is going to go to Blue Voice because I truly believe in Hardy's great work. And over the years that I've known him, he's always in the foreground. So I'll be calling on you to help out here. Pretty soon we'll be able to take your donations, and we've got to help Hardy continue the work that he's doing in Peru. So I just thought I'd put that little plug in so that you all, I know what happens, you all write and say, how can we help, how can we help? And you can either donate directly to Hardy at bluevoice.org, or if you prefer, you'll be able to donate to SaveEarthsOceans.org, knowing that part of our funding will go to Hardy. All right, Hardy, so I also heard that a huge pelican population was wiped out during this time. Are you up on that?
Yes. It was something that, of course, people said, well, the dolphins are dying and the pelicans are dying at the same time. Therefore, they must be related. But that's actually not the case. The pelicans died because there was a switch from a La Nina ocean situation, which is, of course, the temperatures in the surface of the ocean. It switched from a La Nina into a neutral state, and it will ultimately evolve into an El Nino. But what happened is that the fish upon which the pelicans feed, especially the young ones, the newborn of the year, were driven into greater depth by the change in water temperatures. And the younger pelicans simply could not dive deep enough to get to the fish. The older pelicans, stronger, more experienced, were able to dive and feed, and they survived. But about 5,000 pelicans died on the coast of Peru. But it's an interesting thing to teach us that we should not jump to conclusions about what may seem very obvious on the surface. It's actually far more complex. So you can really, pretty much everybody agrees on the fact that the pelicans mortality and the dolphin mortality are completely unrelated events.
That's very surprising, considering it was the same timing. I'm glad to hear that, because of course, your mind immediately goes to some horrific toxic disaster that would affect different species. So I'm glad to hear that the decision, let's say the outcome of your research, is that these were separate events.
And of course, this is not evidence. It's except only in a circumstantial way. But the pelicans would not be affected by the seismic detonations. They do put their heads underwater, but the vast amount of their time is spent standing on the beaches, waiting for something to happen, and then they all launch off. It's a magnificent sight. That I'm talking about down there on the coast of Peru, where there's vast populations of them. And when we were driving along the beach counting the dead dolphins, we saw these huge aggregations of pelicans, and they would be on the beach, and then they'd suddenly all of them rise up and go very close to shore, just 100, max 200 yards offshore, and they would dive like this, these bullets into the water and come up feeding. But they spend a minute amount of their time with their heads underwater, and of course they would not be subject to this decompression syndrome, rapid ascent decompression syndrome, that would in fact impact the dolphins. Many people have written me, boy, you know, if I don't go along and just beat up the oil companies and just point to them and scream, people come down on me really hard. But it's important to get this right. It's important in our love and dedication to the dolphins to get this right.
I agree. And
we're heading for a week from today. We'll be headed for the International Whaling Commission, where of course it's officially dedicated to whales, but press of the world, and in this case it's in Panama, so particularly the press from Latin American countries will be there in droves, and this is a great place for us to get our story out. And our position is going to be not that we can absolutely prove that the seismic testing was the cause of the rapid ascent and decompression syndrome, but what we can say is that there is enough evidence that we have to be extremely careful when we permit these kind of tests to take place, because we have no other explanation than seismic testing for what happened in Peru.
Well, what do you define as being extremely careful? I mean, I don't think the oil company execs give a damn about dying dolphins other than the PR factor. So where do you go from not wanting to point fingers at them to being able to affect some sort of mandate where they reduce these emissions and these ridiculous
what can be done is that there can be observation if they're going to go ahead and do it. I would rather see that they not do it, but if they are going to go ahead and do it, they can put in place observations. They can have airplanes overhead. They can be looking for marine mammals in the area in which they're going to be detonating these seismic tests, and that to a fair degree can mitigate the impact of those detonations. But Peru would have none of that. It's a country that just does not have the resources. Of course, the oil companies would have the resources, but they're not going to do it unless somebody makes them do it.
Right.
And the Obama administration's proposals do include quite a few safeguards for the marine mammals, and the one I'm most familiar with is where there is observation by official government observers who will say, all right, there's a pair of right whales over here, or there's a pod of dolphins over there, so you have to hold off or move the testing ships until they're clear.
I think that's a little minimalistic as far as how to save marine life when we've got somebody looking at the surface of the water and saying, okay, we've got a few mammals over here and there. I mean, we're talking about 1,200 dead dolphins.
Yes. Well, I agree. I don't want to give the impression that I'm in favor of the seismic testing. The government's own statistics are that over 138,000 marine mammals may be injured by this. That's so far beyond unacceptable that it's tragic. So we will put in testimony that, based on our experience in Peru, we'll put in testimony into these government deliberations regarding whether they should be permitted to do it at all. And, of course, our recommendation would be that they not be allowed to do it.
My problem with this whole idea is that if they're allowing the Navy to declare that they expect to have 12 million or 11 million, I think is the number, takes, as they call it, as part of the collateral damage of declaring war on the oceans, then aside from the fact that that will literally destroy the cetacean population of the planet, 138,000 seems a little bit tokenistic. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think, you know, we pick the fights that we can influence, and this is one that I think we have the experience and the on-the-scene experience to be able to make some comments and create input and create popular sentiment against this event on the east coast of the United States. You know, if you try to do everything, you end up doing nothing. So
that's
true. Focus on a few things and try to do them well. And I think our record in Japan and in other parts of the world shows that we can be effective. But a lot of, you know, it's just a huge temptation to jump into every single issue. And you have to, if you're going to be effective, if you're going to be effective, you have to pick a place, a battle you can win. There's one other thing that we think we should discuss that's coming out of Peru right now, if I may. And
yes.
That is the fact that the Peruvians are hunting dolphins for food. And this is a worldwide problem, growing problem, where because fisheries are being destroyed, in many cases by overseas factory ships, mega ships, fisheries that have sustained people around the world for generations are being wiped out as these great ships come through and just totally deplete the ocean area. And what happens is when they're left with fewer fish, they're now turning to hunting dolphins and manatees and dugongs and other marine mammals.
Hold on a minute, Hardy. Your voice is breaking up. I wonder if you've changed the position of your phone.
Well, I haven't. Is this any better?
Not terribly. We'll go ahead for another couple of minutes, and if it doesn't get better, we'll have to call you back. All right, please
fine.
Go ahead.
Shall I go ahead?
Oh, now it's much better.
Do you want me to go? I'm here. Do you want me to go back over what I just said or continue?
I think that it was clear enough, but now you're sounding better. So please pardon the interruption, but I wanted nobody to miss what you were saying. All right, so now we've got not only the Japanese, but the Peruvians hunting dolphins for food. And so I'd like you to talk about, for those who are not familiar with the work that you've done on educating the Japanese as to the toxicity in the dolphin meat. I'm sure that this is very efficient also, let's say, helpful in Peru to help try to train them as well.
Well, what we've, and I say we, the principal investigator in this is Dr. Carlos Yaipenyanos of ORCA in Peru. Blue Voice has the role of providing funding for him and providing international exposure when he gets a result. And one of the results that's relevant both to Japan and to Peru is that when people hunt dolphins in particular, there is an increased incidence of a number of diseases, and this has been proven in the Faroe Islands. It's been proven dramatically in the Arctic, and now it's being proven in Peru, where the incidence of diabetes among the people who eat dolphin that they have hunted is skyrocketing. And Carlos is working in a village called San Jose, working with the health authorities there, has the statistics. They're designing, so far what they're doing is interviewing people gathering statistics that way. But now they're going to institute a program where people who come into the clinic, the local government-sponsored clinic, are given questionnaires, and they're asked to break their diet down into what kind of meat they're eating, if they're eating beef, chicken, if they're eating fish, and if they're eating dolphin. And very strong initial indications are that the people who report eating dolphin regularly have a absolutely out-of-sight incidence of diabetes. And this diabetes connection is something that has been found in the Arctic and in the Faroe Islands, where they among people who eat pilot whales. So eating marine mammals is an extremely unhealthy thing to do. And it is tragically ironic that that is a course that we have to take to try and end the killing of these animals, that the course involves telling people how terribly toxic the meat of these dolphins is, because that just tells the tale of how terribly toxic the ocean is.
Indeed. So what kind of numbers, I mean, are you hearing percentages from Dr. Carlos, I cannot pronounce his last name, with regard to how much the dolphin eating is infiltrating the society?
Well, he's preparing a report right now that we will bring to the International Whaling Commission, and he's just come back. He's very overstretched. He's just come back from the northern, from San Jose and areas north of there. So I don't have statistics for you, but the next time we talk, I pretty surely will.
Is it possible for you to introduce me to him? I'm going to be in Peru in October, and I would like to meet with him if it's at all possible.
Oh, sure. Certainly. I'm sure he'd be delighted to meet you.
Okay, great.
You to Peru.
We can maybe do that off the air. Thank you. I've told a number of people I'm going to try my best to personally see what's happening there. I want to ask you, have these dead bodies been cleaned off the beaches?
Yes, they finally have. I think the Peruvians considered them a health hazard, but they also considered them an embarrassment. And so they were trying to get rid of the evidence. And believe it or not, the Peruvian government concluded that the death of...
Hold on, Hardy. Okay, Hardy, I wanted to ask you then, what about these dead bodies on the ocean? What are they doing? Are they still there with these dead dolphins and dead pelicans? What's going on?
The Peruvian government has moved in, and they've removed the bodies of all the dolphins along the coast. The reason being that they considered it a health hazard. For a while, they closed down all the beaches in Peru as when the pelicans started to die, and they were dying even as far south as Lima and beyond. They closed the beaches until they realized that it was a starvation event. And now the beaches are open, although it's going into winter down there now. But in any case, the dolphin bodies had been removed. Carlos was able to necropsy 30 dolphin bodies. And the Peruvian government necropsied 3 organs from 3 dolphins. And yet the Peruvian government is making these loud protestations of what caused this mass mortality event. And I think it bears repeating that they're saying that it is a natural event. The dolphins died of natural causes.
Yeah, 1,200 dolphins.
From evolutionary forces, which is an utterly... I mean, if it weren't tragic, it would be laughable. But
well, they have to protect their financial investment from those oil companies, I'm sure, and their global image. So we know where that's coming.
Yes, they don't want to upset the oil companies, and they also don't want people thinking that their fish are bad, because fish is a hugely important export item for Peru as well as for internal consumption. If you don't mind my going back to the diabetes, while I've been talking, I brought up the some of the statistics you were asking for. And according to the San Jose Medical Post, the levels of diabetes between 2001 and 2011 have tripled as the human population has opened its diet to dolphin meat, which they call sea pig.
They call it sea pig?
Sea pig, yes.
And all right, well, I'll just be the devil's advocate for a minute here and ask you, diabetes levels are tripling all over the world because of the disgusting diets, many factors, but obviously the commercialization of food is one of them. Do you feel that there is justification that these statistics represent really the dolphin consumption? I was going to say inhalation, good grief. The consumption of dolphin meat, particularly to Peru, or could it be that this is also a reflection of the changing diet of the people?
Well, I think that I wrote an article for the Huffington Post about the fact that bra sizes in the Western nations have gone substantially larger over the past years. And part of the reason is that people are eating, they're putting on weight, they're eating more and they're gaining weight, and that's being reflected in with the size of women's bras. But the other thing that is going on is that the POPs, the persistent organic pollutants, are estrogen imitators. They're chemicals which act as estrogen in the body, and they're hormone disruptors. So they essentially super estrogenize women, and they estrogenize men. So we're all, depending on your diet, getting more, essentially more estrogen than naturally we should get. And so that is, as I said in my article, it's causing bra sizes to get larger. But the other term that I used was that they were hormone disruptors. And so these chemicals affect the way the body stores fat and the way the body metabolizes sugar. And there is no doubt about the fact that the consumption of fish, marine mammals, and other animals that have a lot of fat in them cause the consumer to take on a heavy burden of these chemicals. And they do definitely disrupt the way we store fat and the way we deal with sugar. And so diabetes is emerging in places where it never has before. As the pollutant levels have gone up in the oceans, and therefore in the marine mammals that they eat, in the Arctic, for instance, the levels of diabetes are going sky high. And that it's definitely been connected to these top chemicals.
So are you saying that this is common to eating fish in general or particularly to the dolphin? I mean, where do you convince a public that they can still eat their fish but to stay off of the larger fish, the tuna and the dolphins?
The key to it is the selection of the food that you eat, and of course, eating dolphins, apart from what we consider to be the moral reasons, is simply unhealthy because they are apex predators. They're at the top of the food chain, and they bioconcentrate these chemicals. What are very dilute chemicals actually in the water. It's not as though there's a huge amount of these chemicals in a given, you know, square meter of water. It's what happens as the food chain operates and the plankton consume the chemicals, and then a small fish eats the plankton, and then a bigger fish eats that, and a bigger fish eats that, and a bigger fish eats that. until you get up to fish such as tuna and shark and swordfish. And at the very, very top of the food chain, you have dolphins and humans. So what a human has to do is to select fish that are low in these chemicals. And so you could say, for instance, that Alaska wild-caught salmon are very healthy. And a fish like a swordfish or tuna, large tuna, are going to have a lot of these chemicals.
Right. Of course, you know, it's always a proper, a perfect moment for me to interject my call, my appeal to people to seriously consider a vegetarian diet, because what we're hearing from Hardy, we usually talk about this in the meat department, but obviously we're now talking about the peril of eating fish. I don't think that anyone that's listening to this program is eating dolphin, but nonetheless, the food chain, the situation in the oceans, really, really try a vegetarian diet. Try it for a week or two. See how good your body feels. And if we could only just increase this movement of people that are no longer dependent upon fish and meat, we can make some serious strides on this planet. I know I'm speaking to the choir here, but I just thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah, we should be clear that it's not just eating seafood that produces this effect. The chemicals are lipophilic, which means that they are attracted to fat. So they would be in, these chemicals would be in butter, they'd be in beef. The greater the percentage of fat in what you're consuming, the larger exposure you have to these chemicals.
You haven't talked about whales. Do we have whale populations in this region? And was there any sighting or any damage done to the whales there?
You're talking about in Peru?
Yeah.
There are whale populations in this general area. There were sperm whales actually hunted in Peru back until the late 60s. And there are, Carlos said that humpback whales are just beginning to migrate into the northern area of the stranding zone right now. So yes, whales do inhabit those waters, but there's no evidence that any whales were damaged by this whatever it was that caused the dolphins to die.
Okay, so you are presenting in the Whale Commission, you're presenting your case for what happened there. And is there going to be an appeal to stop the oil companies from drilling?
An appeal by us?
In your presentation to the International Whale Commission, are you going to make an appeal that that this not be repeated? Where is this headed, in other words?
We are going to the Whaling Commission primarily to talk to the media. And the Whaling Commission will be dealing with its own set of issues that are related to whales. They do not touch the subject of what are called small cetaceans. The Whaling Commission, if the Whaling Commission ever tries to discuss dolphins, for instance, as the situation in Japan, the Japanese go berserk, and it's not in the charter of the International Whaling Commission to deal with small cetaceans, so it has never been taken up. But we're using this as an opportunity to bring Carlos up to Panama and for us to go down to Panama, and we'll have a booth and we'll be meeting with the media. We're creating DVDs and handouts right now and hoping to get this story back into the world's consciousness. And we will be concluding, Blue Voice will be concluding its paper with this appeal that seismic testing is highly dangerous to marine mammals and ought to be restricted or not allowed at all. We think that this evidence from Peru is something that is new and is very, very important to the deliberations over whether these permits be allowed. One of the major marine mammal scientists, a man for whom I have a great deal of respect, and he has vast experience with mass strandings of dolphins, he said that there has never been a case where seismic testing has caused a mass mortality event. However, I learned from a scientist at NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that there is in fact evidence of a seismic event in Madagascar, where a large number of melon-headed whales died in the same manner as the dolphins died in Peru. It was exactly in the area where a major oil company was conducting seismic testing. However, the government of Madagascar will not allow investigators in to take a look at it.
You know, I'm sure to anyone listening, first of all, they can hear me sighing between sentences, but there is a sense of, I don't want to say hopelessness because that's not where I live, but surely the power of these oil companies to manipulate governments is so overwhelming that one asks the question, how in the world are we ever going to right these scales? So your approach is that, do you believe that public outcry can be enough to offset this work, to actually cause them to stop?
Well, I think that it's the only choice that we can take is to take the point of view that we do have the power to change things. And it's manifest many, many, many times that things have changed, sometimes starting with a single individual and building into a mass movement. But you have to take the point of view that you can be effective and make these changes. If you don't, you decline into despair and you can't possibly be effective. So
yeah.
I know from, if you remember in my book, The Voice of the Dolphins, I went to Iki Island in 1980 and I filmed the slaughter of about 1,000 dolphins there, a dreadful thing. I filmed it and brought it to CBS News, and it went on, it was processed and put on the satellite, went around the world. And it caused a tsunami of protest against this practice of killing dolphins. And it, in fact, actually did stop the killing of dolphins at Iki Island and quite a number of the other villages where it was practiced. People today tend to focus on Taiji as being the place where it's happening, but it's actually the only place left where this kind of dolphin hunting still goes on. So, well over 90% of the villages that used to do this are no longer doing it. So that, and I said, when this tremendous reaction took place, I said to myself, well, that shows you what one man on a budget of $2,000 with a camera can do to affect a tragic situation. So that's the way you have to think.
Well, you certainly have been a pioneer in with regard to that, Hardy. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize that you were the precursor to the film The Cove.
Yes, I was in Japan as early as 1979 working in those fishing villages, and The Cove came along, three years ago or so. So, and of course, I supported that film. It was a multi-million dollar budget that they had, and they were able to produce not only the film, but a great deal of outreach.
Yeah.
And, make the world aware of this dreadful event. Unfortunately, at Taiji, it's still going on. But
But I think we can all agree that the consciousness around this planet regarding the cetaceans has risen dramatically. There's so much coming out now. People are definitely becoming more sensitized to what's going on.
Let me tell you a nice story.
For them. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm saying
I'd like to tell you about a nice story in Japan, which we've just gotten our film up, and there's an island which is actually in one of the districts of Tokyo officially. It's called Toshima Island. It's off the coast of Japan near Tokyo. And what happened is that a few years ago, a mother dolphin and her baby swam into the waters around this island called Toshima. They were greeted by the islanders as friends, and they were made citizens of this little island village. Then, over the years, other dolphins have migrated to Toshima. There is today a population, at last count, of 16 dolphins, and they are revered by the people of Toshima Island.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So Blue Voice funded a film, a short 5-minute film, that has just been delivered to us and is going to be on our website very shortly. It's actually on our Facebook fan page right now, but it takes a little bit longer to get it. And it's also on YouTube and Vimeo, so anybody who wants to use Google on the Internet could find Toshima Island Dolphins and Blue Voice. That should lead you to the film.
Okay, wonderful.
That's a wonderful story. People tend to vilify all Japanese for the actions of very, very few people in this village of Taiji. And the fact is most Japanese love dolphins. And it's completely unfair to criticize the Japanese for doing these crimes, just as it would be unfair to criticize all Americans for the way, let's say, cattle are treated.
Sure, of course. I agree with that. On the other hand, it's human nature to do those generalizations and finger-pointing. I'm always reminding people that it starts with what we do, our conscious choices every day. Every time you sink your teeth into a nice piece of a swordfish steak, you're contributing to the problem, too. So, of course, we only get out of this crisis when we recognize that everything is interrelated and that every action affects the greater scheme of things. We say the words, but now is the time to really live them, really believe them, and really live them.
And of course, you can impact the oil companies by the consumption of oil by consuming less of it, finding ways of transporting yourself that are less. That require less petroleum product, and technology is coming up with a certain degree of assistance in that regard. Unfortunately, the world's population, if you look at China and India and the demand for cars, it's kind of wiping out the benefits of conservation, but nevertheless, we need to do those. And eventually, I believe that technology will provide a way to transport us around that is cheaper than and less damaging than oil.
Yes, I agree, and I think that we are at the apex. Well, not the apex. Let's say at the moment of arrival as far as what the human race is going to have to do to bring the planet back into balance. So
we have at temperatures in the northeastern United States right now. I just am astounded that people can dismiss global warming and climate change.
Me too.
I mean, all you have to do is look at a weather map. The temperature in New York yesterday was 99 degrees.
Wow.
Records are broken all over the place. I subscribe to the tweets from Al Gore's Climate Reality, and if you follow, you know, it's just staggering that the temperature swings that are taking place, and I don't know what's affecting the Azores right now, but you say you're certainly having
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave that discussion for another time because we've run out of time, but I will be talking about this. I'm looking out my window, and I'm in a torrential rainfall and a fog, and this has been pretty much since I got here. So this is where the Gulf Stream passes, and one thing at a time. Thank you, Hardy. Again, I would like to call you all to visit Hardy's site, bluevoice.org. He's got some fabulous footage. He needs your donations. He's got a great book out that I've got here as well. So please support him. He is the guy who is there with the low budget, hands-on, trying to, not only trying, but making a difference and not just talking the talk. This is not a big corporate global conglomerate. This is a man and his team out there on the coast of this world. So please help him, and please get ready for SaveEarthsOceans.org. I'm going to call on people for a number of projects. I know you're ready, and I'm so grateful that you are rising to the call. And with that, Hardy, thanks you. I will ask you for the contact with Carlos, and I will go out personally and bring back to you guys as much as I can also glean from the situation. So that's coming up. Hardy, I've got 2 minutes for you to leave a last message for the listeners.
Well, I'd love to mention The Voice of the Dolphins, which is my book, and it discusses another unusual mortality event which took place along the eastern coast of the United States back in the late 1980s. Unfortunately, they're called MMEs, mass mortality events, are becoming more common around the world. There's one going on in the Gulf of Mexico, especially around Texas right now. And I covered one back in the late 80s and wrote about it in my book. It provides a lot of background on what goes into when a MME is declared in the United States. There is funding, and there are interagency teams that jump on this situation, and they go out and they investigate it, and they often have a very, very hard time finding out what produced this mortality event. Peru,
okay,
unfortunately.
I've got to interrupt you, Hardy. I'm really out of time, but please go out and get this book. It's on Amazon. It's on Hardy's site too, The Voice of the Dolphins by Hardy Jones. Okay, Hardy, I got to let you go. Thank you for coming with your updates, with your love. It just pours through your words, the love of the cetaceans. And talk your talk in the commission. We will be behind you, morally supporting you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Take care, Hardy. Goodbye, everybody. This is Patricia Corey signing out for the moment. I'll be with you in 2 weeks with another dynamic show. So I'll have Brooks Agnew on. We're going to be talking about the exploration of the inner earth. So don't miss that. This is Patricia Corey signing out. Na-na-na!